Call to order the House Committee on Environment and Water and open a public hearing on House Bill 2184, a bill that I know fairly well from my own service on the Bottle Bill Task Force. Members, in 2007, as you know, we passed Senate Bill 707, I think that's right, that in addition to changing the bottle bill by adding water deposits and doing some other things, created a Bottle Bill Task Force, a committee comprised mostly of citizens from private life and a couple of legislators, Senator Hass and myself, who provided recommendations to the agency and to the 2009 legislature. Those recommendations were taken up and by legislative council and are in the bill that we have before us today, House Bill 2184. I'm going to invite Senator Hess. Yes, come on up. Will you kick us off? And we'll hear next from John Kopetsky and Bob Danko and Peter Spendalo from DEQ. And just a reminder to everybody, and I'll say this multiple times, we have a fairly long list. We're on our third page now of folks who would like to testify. Once again, we've managed to provoke a lot of people into coming to our hearing. It's always fun. And so we'll be instituting a time limit at some point. But Senator Hass, you can have as much time as you want.
Well, thank you. I'll be brief. I'm on the Environment Committee a couple doors down. Yes. And, taking time. I appreciate you getting me in here fast. I'll try to be quick. My name is Mark Hass, State Senator from District 14. As you all know, the Oregon Bottle Bill is a storied piece of Oregon's heritage, and no one is more proud of that story than me. Tom McCall is one of my political heroes. He gave me my Eagle Scout badge when I was 13 years old. I revere him. I revere him. So I was very proud to be part of that Bottle Bill legacy last year by serving on the Bottle Bill Task Force. I guess it was after that experience, though, that I became convinced that it may be possible to love something to death. There were terrific people on that task force, chair included, and I have no quarrel with any of the intentions or anyone's love for the state on that task force. But I was on the opposing side of many of the recommendations before you in that package. And I do believe that if we were to adopt some of those recommendations into law, we would be effectively loving the bottle bill to death. So I'd like to very briefly give you my take on the bottle bill and how it relates to some of the legislation before you. In my mind, when the bottle bill was passed in 1971, it passed as a litter bill. It was simply a tool to clean up roadsides and beaches. The word recycling is not mentioned in the statute, nor is it mentioned in the news stories during those years. It was really never a recycling bill. It was a litter bill, and that is what I hope it remains. And so for that reason, I think it's poor public policy to now try to convert it to recycling aspirations into a law that is an incredibly successful law that historically has resulted in Oregon having some of the cleanest roadsides anywhere in the country. I think it would be a huge threat to our success if we were to, for example, add liquor bottles and wine bottles or anything else that's not a significant part of the litter stream. There's no data showing that liquor bottles or wine bottles are a significant part of Oregon's litter problem. My fear is that these will break the back of Oregon's bottle bill. Now, as you know, water bottles were added to the bottle bill January 1st, an expansion that made a lot of sense given the litter problems created by water bottles. It's only been a month or so. The jury is still out on how well the process is working with millions of new containers to process, but it looks like, for now, for the most part, things are going okay. After this expansion, and after talking to people at the container facility, at the grocery stores, and at OLCC, it feels like the bottle bill is a little like someone driving down I-5 at 95 miles per hour. That it's okay as long as there's no obstacles, no curves, and no one pushing them to go faster. It took 37 years for this first major expansion. I guess my message to you today is, if anything, try to be patient and thoughtful before hitting the gas again. So don't get me wrong, as long as people keep throwing stuff out the car windows and leaving garbage on the beaches, we'll always need a bottle bill. And yes, ultimately we'll need to add sports drinks and other single-serving containers that aren't included, but I just hope we can be thoughtful and patient. Let's preserve the bottle bill, not break her back.
Thank you, Senator Hassan. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Representative Barnhart.
I take it, Senator, that that means you're opposed to the bill in total? Or are there some parts of it?
I think there's a bottle bill that we can pass this year that sets up some timelines and tightens up some of the legislation that passed in the last session.
But not an expansion.
Well, I just think it's a little too early now. I'd wait until the water bottle issues sort themselves out in the way they're going to sort out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. I'm not planning to testify on this bill from this seat or any other, but I do want to say a few words, and I agree with Senator Hass's concerns about not wanting to break the back of the bottle bill. I think that this is such an important piece of the Oregon heritage and such an important piece of our work as a committee that we need to be very careful and sensitive. My concern, and I think we'll hear this as we hear from DEQ and others, is really to this question of to what extent is the bottle bill, today's bottle bill, coping well with the kinds of expansion that we've put upon it, and I think we were right to do so. And to what extent could today's bottle bill, the current system, tolerate additional expansion, which, like Senator Hass, is a place I think ultimately we need to go. The recommendations in the Bottle Bill Task Force anticipate not expansion to additional containers tomorrow or in the next year, but several years down the road, and we'll hear the timing of that. They also anticipate an expanded and enhanced and more robust redemption system that could, in my view, help us deal with the product that's coming through the system today, make it increase convenience to consumer and handle additional product if we should expand to teas and sports drinks and juices and potentially liquor and wine bottles. So I think our ultimate goals are the same, and I think Senator Hass is right that it would be there is a bottle bill we could pass this session that would help set the stage for a more successful bottle bill, both from the standpoint of including more beverage containers as well as working better for consumers. And if you're like me, you hear from neighbors and consumers and constituents who are frustrated with some of the challenges they experience under the current bottle bill, and that's one of the things that I think today's bill will allow us to talk about. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's great to see you, Senator Hass. I saw the beginning of your testimony on TV. I missed about a minute of it as I was getting down here. When you're talking about breaking the back of the bottle, I understand if there are certain things that various advocates want to pass, that those might not be able to happen. Is your concern that if they did happen, and you say it breaks the back, is it the bottle bill that would be broken, or is it people who would be harmed by the new bottle bill? We're worried about their people's backs. Are you actually? Is there something that I am? Is an honest question. Is there something that would play out that you think would actually destroy the entire bottle bill if we did X, Y, and Z? Explain to me a little bit sort of the breaking back of the bottle bill concept.
I think if you go to any one of these stores, especially some of the big ones up in Portland, if you look at the bottle bill collection and the process, and you go over to the container plant recycling yards, and you see how full throttle they are going. And you say, okay, now imagine that with all of the wine bottles consumed in the state. Will the process handle it? I just don't see how it could. And I don't see the need for that. And so, a lot of people are unsure about whether the system could handle all these water bottles. And like I said, the jury's still out, but it looks like maybe it is handling it. And so, you just... Like I said, it's like you're going down the freeway at 95 miles per hour, and before we keep adding, I think it's a really popular notion that a lot of legislators want to be part of this bottle bill legacy and expand it. And
Vicky Berger just walked in. Speaking of the bottom of the legacy.
That's important. I just want it to be thoughtful that we make the right kinds of adjustments so we don't break what has been maybe the most successful litter bill in the land. There are recycling technologies out there that have far surpassed this notion of putting beer bottles in the trunk of a car, driving to a grocery store, having them trucked and driven somewhere else. I mean, we have sorting technologies. People in the metro area understand the big sorting bins that we have now. And that technology has surpassed the rather old, you know, bottle bill technology. And those are the things we need to work on. You know, rural recycling, if we want to raise recycling rates, let's look at incentives for rural Oregon to be more efficient in doing it. Let's look at building materials, which is a huge trouble spot in the recycling world. But I just want to make sure that we don't use the bottle bill to try and solve all of the world's environmental problems, when in fact it's a simple litter bill and it's working really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Haas.
Thank you all.
Representative Berger, come on up. We would not be here today talking about this bill if not for the work of your father and your family. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. Thank you to the committee. I'll be brief. I do have a history with the bottle bill, so I'd like to speak briefly, and I will be interested and hope to stay for a while and listen to your testimony today. I'm always interested in this subject, maybe two. I loved Senator Haas saying that the bottle bill was a simple litter bill. I can tell you that its founder and the person that conceived it knew darn well it was more than litter, but he sold it as a litter bill, and that's why we have a bottle bill today. But he called it a simple litter bill. I call it a one-trick pony. It's a simple mechanism which does one thing very, very well. And it addresses recycling only in terms of the low-hanging fruit. And by that I mean their beverage containers. They are common, easily recyclable material of glass, aluminum, and PET plastic. It took 35 years to make any changes to this one-trick pony because it is a one-trick pony. And last session, we added water bottles. And the reason that we could do that is water is now a very common beverage, not conceived of in 1971, that Oregonians would be buying water and carrying it around like that. The PET container is now highly standardized and very recyclable. That's why water bottles were able to be put into our existing bottle bill. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the changes from last session were easy or simple or seamless and easy to implement. Behind the curtains, there is right now and has been a Herculean effort to create a statewide system so grocers, who, believe me, have no great love for this system, and with good reason, so grocers are not acting as warehouses, and that the various distributors of water products are able to access a system to get the product moving back out of the grocery stores. Remember, when the bottle bill was first adopted, there was a system of distribution that no longer works for water. It's a very different system. So in putting water in, there was this behind-the-scenes thing that had to happen, and it is happening, and it hasn't been easy. But there are two attributes which the bottle bill absolutely must retain to be effective. The first one, and the one that I always put first, is the goodwill of the consumers in their willingness to do this exchange. If we add too much, make the bottle bill too odorous, and we are always in danger of that, we lose the consumers. They're the people that bring it back for the nickel. They pay that nickel, and it's money out of their pockets. They bring it back. And if we lose them, we essentially lose the bottle bill. The second thing that I love about the bottle bill, that my father conceived of the bottle bill to be a central element, and which I would really hate to lose, is, despite what the general public thinks, this system requires not one FTE of government dollars. It is a system that government requires but is totally paid for by private industry interests. We don't have a bottle bill commission. We don't have a... We have some people in government who help us make sure it works, but this is not a government program. It's just a government mandate, and it has always been that way. The bill before you has provisions that may have value, but certainly don't. I don't want to go there now. Let me be specific. We are less than 2 months into what is essentially a massive behind-the-curtain change in getting these water bottles moving through the recycling system. Let's get that fully workable and operable before we even think about other containers. And frankly, the containers that are mentioned in this bill, sports drinks, coffee, juice, for instance, are not sufficiently standardized to fit on this one-trick pony. They're just all over the map in terms of their configuration and where they would go once they get out of the stores and if they had a redemption in them. I suggest that we keep, instead of this, advancing curbside recycling, because that's a way of getting those things back into a recycling stream when they aren't one size fits all. And I can tell you that a dime will certainly add it, going from a nickel to a dime will certainly increase redemption, but in today's economic climate it will have a negative environmental impact by greatly increasing the traffic across the Columbia Bridge from Washington and the Snake River into Ontario. Out-of-state redemption has always been a problem with the bottle bill, and a dime a container will look very, very good to an unemployed Vancouver family. Trust me on this. We will have a massive influx of bottles that no redemption, no deposit was ever put on them. I know that the bill says, well, we're talking about 2011. If this is a good idea in 2011, let's come back and look at it in 2011. Right now, we have a task before us to make the one-trick pony, get the water bottles on it, and we're doing very, very well on that. I applaud and thank the task force for their work and their support of the bottle bill. I encourage you to keep looking at the redemption center ideas. It's always been on the table. I think we've made some progress in looking at that. But I ask you to indefinitely delay adding any more container types and adding deposits to our hardworking and very successful one-trick pony. Thank you. And I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much for being here, Representative Berger. Are there questions?
Has got them all. Thanks, you guys.
Thank
I will
you.
Stick around and listen to the testimony because I'm always very interested.
Super. I will have John Kopetsky, who chaired the Bottle Bill Task Force, if you want to come on up and present the recommendations of the task force.
Good morning. Or afternoon. I left Pendleton. It was in the morning. Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is John Kopetsky. I live in Pendleton, or just outside of Pendleton, and I am chairman of the Bottle Bill Task Force. In fact, we've got a little work ahead of us. I want to talk a little bit about the task force itself to begin with. In November of 2007, the task force was formed, and we met pretty continuously through the 2008 through the spring and summer and into late fall. The task force has a broad base of membership. For instance, Eric Forrest, who is on the task force, is a distributor from Eugene. Jerry Powell, I think a lot of you know, is in charge of or is with Resource Recycling News, and I think was involved in the original 1971 bottle bill that passed. Suzanne Johansson, who is here, is from Bend, and she ran a nonprofit recycling center in the Bend area for years. Dan Floyd represented the Safeway, the retail stores, and did a very, very good job. I'm trying to think of Steve, I could think of all the people on the commission. Steve Emery from Madras owns a water bottling facility. Steve Apotheker from Metro is probably my idea of a rocket scientist when it comes to the issues of recycling and all the concerns that are going on in the state. So and also thank Senator Haas for his input, and to you, Representative Cannon, for all of the help that you provided for the task force. So we had there was a lot of discussion. These are very knowledgeable people who came together and worked on this bill or worked on the task force to put together a comprehensive plan. And we didn't agree on everything, and we tried to reach consensus on some things, and some things we couldn't reach consensus on. There was a lot of open and very frank discussions, and we had a lot of input from outside parties, interested parties. There were distributors, and there were state agencies, OLCC and DEQ, and a lot of public involvement from recyclers and so on. And it was difficult to bring all of this together, because this is a very touchy subject and a very emotional subject. What I found, I was totally, when I got on this commission, I had no connections one way or the other. So it didn't, I was totally new. Talk about getting thrown into the fire. There was a lot of unknowns that was going to happen, and there was a lot of concerns by some of the members, and part of it was the implementation of the water bottle coming into effect on January 1. There was a big concern about that. People didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't know if all of a sudden on January 1 after the Rose Bowl game they were going to bring in bags and bags of water bottles that hadn't had a nickel deposit on it. Those things kind of were worrisome. And I think after it came into effect, it didn't seem to be the problem of it was thought to be. I was up in Joseph last week in Wallowa County, and they have one little supermarket up there, and I guess you can call it a supermarket since it's the only grocery store in town. And I was talking with the clerk and asked her about water bottles, whether you had seen very many come through, and she said, "Well, they passed the water bottle bill, and you can now get a nickel deposit form and everything, and it came into effect January 1, and told me the whole story. We sell a lot of water and all this." And I said, "Well, have you gotten very many back?" And she thought for a minute. She says, "We haven't received any." So I don't know if the public is not aware of it or people just are not caring to bring back water bottles to the stores yet. So, and I think there was also a lot of concern by some of the members, but I think on a lot of issues, but I think some of those issues have been resolved with the creation of the statewide distributor co-op that will be collecting containers from the stores. So I think some of those issues are going away. After I testify, I think the DEQ will be here to be able to answer a lot of your technical questions. But I have some specific thoughts. The task force recommendations for this bottle bill, you have to take the entire package. It's the package that I believe is count. It's difficult to separate it individually. You need to look at the whole program. And I think the majority at that time, or I believe, felt that it was critical to pass the package now. Why wait? And have the various phase-in dates in the bill. And I'll get into that in a little bit later. The goals that we established for the returns is at 80%. And that's in 2017. And some of the members wanted that goal set higher. Some didn't want goals set. And so this was a compromise to say, okay, well, at least we have a starting point. Adding the remainder of the beverage containers, the discussions centered on what to add and when. And adding wine and liquor brought a lot of discussion, I'll tell you. The majority felt that these beverages belong in the bill, just like pop cans, pop bottles, and the rest. Let's see. In 2013, it was meant to be a compromise when these bottle, when we felt that these should be added to the return list, because it needed to have some sort of a timeline. We didn't want to extend the timeline. We wanted the timeline to be within the foreseeable future, to where businesses and the industry can get it implemented, but we're not waiting 15 years down the road. The 10-cent refund, the majority believe that after 37 years, the nickel just isn't enough to entice people to bring cans back to the store. And so it was, you know, it was voted to basically raise it to a dime. And if you look at the state of Michigan, and I know Michigan has a problem with out-of-state returns coming in, the Michigan has a dime, and their rate of return is in the 95% or 90-plus percent rate. So the task force also believes that the stores need to continue to take back returns. But they also agree that the present system isn't working. And people are turned off by the conditions of the return rooms that the stores have. And that's one of the causes of the rates continuing to go down, the returns rate returning to go down. There are long lines sometimes, the machines are broken. I can give you some examples. Since being on this commission or on this task force, I kind of monitor and look at these things and see what happens. I was in LeGrand a week or so ago. And if you go to the Safeway in LeGrand, the return center is on the west side of the building, down at the far end, and it's outside. So if you're a customer, you can either plan to go park by the return center and get back in your car and go back around into the store, or you can park out in front of the store and take your cans back to the far end of the building. When I got back there was people in there. They were frustrated because the machines weren't working. And to the credit of the young lady that was working for the store, she came in and was looking at the machines and said, "Well, you know, this one here is kind of temperamental. You just got to kick it a little bit and it'll start working." And sure enough, she did, and it started working. So, but she also had to open up the other machines and unplug them. You know, in Pendleton, the Safeway store. They just remodeled. But the old way you did it at the Safeway store in Pendleton is you went into the breezeway and you went down along behind the shopping carts, and there were the machines. You didn't have room. There is no room to take a cart down there because you can get blocked and there's probably a fire hazard. I don't know. But anyways, you get back in there. There's glass on the floor. There's debris. There's syrup or spilled products and everything else. It's dirty. And a lot of these places are dirty. And there's garbage bags, there's boxes, the machines do not work, and it's a hassle. Now, to set it Safeway's credit, they have remodeled the store. It's all nice and fancy now. But now the entrance is on the outside. However, the good thing is, at least it's not at the back of the building like the Grand store is. So you go into the store, you go into the return area, and I was there Tuesday night. The floor is the same condition. It's dirty. There's garbage. There's plastic bags everywhere. There's boxes on top of the machines. This is not conducive to wanting people to be able to bring their cans and bottles back. There needs to be a different way. And as this is a new store, this is a new addition to the store, what I thought was interesting is that the coming out of the store and going into the main, or coming out of the return center and going into the store, the sidewalk was covered with people's footprints from the gooey stuff that's inside the return areas. And so it's filthy. It's either got to be a health issue or it's got to be an occupational hazard for people to be in conditions like this. So The task force proposal of the redemption centers would help that. The industry's proposal for 90 redemption centers around the state is a good start, and the task force agreed on this. And the state and the industry wants to be handling this. You do not want the state to become involved unless, of course, somewhere down the road the state has to. The task force job, even though there's a lot of discussion, a lot of, you know, issues and a lot of disagreements, but if you look at what...
John, I'm going to ask you to wind it up.
Okay, I'm going to wind it up, yes. I've been told... I'm going to just give... It's a great example on how to put something together like this. The industry has already got involved in forming the co-op to be able to handle the state return or handle the returns from containers. The industry, with unredeemed deposits, are going to build redemption centers. When those redemption centers will be built around the state, in 2011, the task force proposal is to raise it to a dime, the return to a dime. Hopefully that will get more people interested in bringing cans and bottles back to the redemption center, which will have an unlimited amount, or they can still take them back to the store. In 2013, then the rest of the sports drinks, other types of bottles coverages become come under coverage for return deposits. So you have a mechanism here. It gives business time to get ready for what is coming down the road. And it's a way for Oregonians to get back involved in bringing the taking the cans and the bottles off the roads and recycling them. So I'll shut up now.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John, and thank you for your excellent service chairing the committee. You were a fair chair. It was an open process. It was an exhaustive process, maybe exhausting. Do you recall how many hours of testimony we heard and how many... hours of deliberation? It was...
We had 12 meetings, and each meeting was somewhere between 3 to 4 hours,
yeah,
at least.
It's been a long time on this issue. Thank you.
Was.
Are there questions for Mr. Kopetsky? Great.
Question for you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to be hearing more testimony from folks on the task force, or is everything else going to be public testimony?
No, we have, well, in a sense, both. The members of the public include members of the task force. Who we will be hearing from.
Okay,
thanks, John. Peter Spendelow and Bob Danko from DQ. Peter staffed the task force and did extraordinary work kind of providing us with data on the bottle bill. He traveled to other states and British Columbia to review their bottle bills and presented all kinds of options to the task force about how we can move forward. It was extremely useful. And I don't know which of you wants to kick off. Bob has a long history with the bottle bill. Maybe you can give folks who may not know that a snapshot of your history with this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environment.
Can you turn the microphone just to point it a little towards you?
And with me is Peter Spindelow. If it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'll quickly walk through the bill section by section.
Okay.
Peter will then do an overview with a little PowerPoint of how we got to where we are today with the bottle bill and where 2184 takes us. And then I'll wrap up with a couple thoughts on possible amendments. I first want to say that... you're looking at, Peter and I, you're looking at 56 years at DEQ. That may be good or that may be bad, but that's what you're looking at. I think this session we have an amazing opportunity. We're this close to having a model bottle bill system. And I think with some hard work, we can have a model bottle bill system in this state, which will be the envy of other states and the federal government. And before Peter goes, and well, before I go through section by section, I do want to, on record, say thanks a lot to the distributors who formed the statewide distributor co-op to collect containers and the grocers who have worked with them. Without those two groups really pitching in over the last year to make the bottle work, we wouldn't be where we are today. And they have done a great job, and we really appreciate that. Just briefly on the bill. It's a simple bill, and I want to thank Legislative Council for taking the task force recommendations and sticking to those recommendations and drafting a relatively simple bill. Section 1 of the bill sets the annual beverage container return rate at 80% and requires DEQ to determine that rate annually. Section 2 of the bill adds the sports drinks, the coffees, the teas, the juices, and the liquor and wine to the list of beverages in the bill. Section 3 increases the deposit to 10 cents.
Bob, will you describe when these provisions take effect under the bill, too?
I'll do that. Section 4 is a technical fix that allows the breweries to charge more than 10 cents when they sell containers to the public, more than 10-cent deposit. Section 5 gives OLCC authority to establish standards for the redemption of beverage containers. They may already have that authority, but the task force wanted to make sure they did. And Section 6 gives them the authority to adopt rules to do that. Section 17 calls on DEQ to report to the 2017 legislature regarding the whole bottle bill and all the issues around it. Section 8 incorporates some of these sections into the existing ORSs. Section 9 is the section that says adding the other beverages, distilled liquor, wine, sports drinks, and so on. Section 9 says it goes into effect January 1, 2013. And Section 10 says that the increase to 10 cents goes into effect January 1, 2011. Short, simple bill, and to the point. Peter, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I'm Peter Spendlow with the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm going to run over some background here very quickly. You know, the bottle bill has been in effect since 1972. It has been a very effective bill at reducing litter and increasing recycling. The recycling rate for containers under the bottle bill as of 2005, which is the last data that we have, very firm data from our waste composition studies and our recycling surveys, we estimated there was about 83% of the beverage containers covered under the bottle bill were being either returned for redemption or some of them being recycled through curbside, for a total recycling rate of 83%. If you compare that to the containers that are not covered under the bottle bill, their average was 37%, so you can see there's a really substantial difference in the recycling rate between bottle bill containers and those covered under just the curbside and drop-off and the other sort of recycling we have. There are 10 other states that have bottle bills. There are a variety of different types of bottle bills, and as the chair said, I did go and visit a few of those states in a Canadian province to find out how they were doing things, what was working, you know, so I could give recommendations, or I could give information, I should say, to the task force as to how things were working. Three states, include, and also most of the Canadian provinces, have bottle bills that include the vast majority of beverages, that they include the things like the sports drinks and the juices and things like that. Just quickly, so you understand how the law works, this is a diagram that shows how basically the distributor is the one who originates the deposit. When the distributor sells beverages to the retailer, the distributor will collect 5-cent deposit from the retailer. When the retailer sells that container to the consumer, the retailer gets back his 5 cents that he's paid to the distributor, so the retailer is back even again. The consumer is now out 5 cents. That consumer can take back that container to any retailer who has at the moment it has a store of 5,000 square feet or more who sells that same kind of beverage, and then that consumer can get their 5 cents back. The retailer then can present that to the distributor or to an organization representing the distributors and in turn get the 5 cents back. At that point, the container's gone the whole circle, the money's gone the whole circle, everybody's back where they were, and as the representative pointed out earlier, you will notice that there is no government in there. The government doesn't see the money anyway. And I get a whole lot of calls from various out-of-state distributors who want to get register under a bottle bill and want to know what they have to do. And it's really kind of fun to tell them, no, you don't have to pay us anything. You don't have to register with us. You might want to talk to the co-op because they can provide some services, but you don't have to come to us for anything. This is information from 2005, again, on what's going on with our beverage containers. And again, you can see that the recycling, overall recycling rate for beer and soft drink is up there around 83%. Back then, water was not covered under the law, and we had information based on our waste composition studies, where we are actually going out and grabbing samples out of the garbage to see what people are throwing away. And you can see that the majority of water bottles back then were being thrown away, and the water was definitely increasing very quickly in the waste stream as the sales of water went up. And so the overall average for the no-deposit beverages was about 37% compared, again, to the 83% under the bottle bill. And by the way, the other key thing to notice about this is the distribution of the quantities that beer and soft drink make up the majority, by far the majority of beverages being sold. Water is certainly up there, juice is up there. Those are the big quantity materials on account basis. Things have changed, though, since 2005, and these are projections. They're not done with quite the degree of assuredness that I have from the 2005 numbers, because we only have data on the one half, what's being recycled. We do an annual recycling survey of all the people who recycle materials in the state, including all the beverage distributors who handle these materials. And we saw in 2006 and 2007 in particular a strong drop in the returns of those containers. I mean, not that strong of a drop, but it was enough to drop things down to where we now estimate that it's closer to about 76 or 77% is the overall recycling rate for beer and soft drink containers. And then I have no data at all on what is coming back on water bottles at this point yet, but we had projected originally that it would be somewhere around 62%, and so I have that in there. So that's, again, what's going on now. You will notice from this, by the way, that there are close to 600 million containers that are either being disposed or being recycled through methods that are not being redeemed. Some of those containers are coming in from out of state, but we expect that's only about, it's hard to know exactly how many, but maybe 3 or 4% of the total redemptions are things coming in from out of state. So the changes that HB 2184 results in is, first of all, adding beverages, increasing the recovery of those containers that are currently not covered under the law. Presumably, if you add juice bottles, their recycling rate will go up closer to what's currently the case for beer and soft drink rather than staying at what's currently the case for the curbside programs. Again, doubling the refund value. And if you look at the data out there on different states that have different levels of deposits, back when California was at 2.5 cents a container for their refund value, it had by far the lowest recycling rate of any of the bottle bill states. As they've raised it, that rate has gone up. And again, as pointed out earlier by Chair Kopetsky, Michigan, which has a 10-cent deposit, has by far the highest recycling, the highest redemption rate of all the states. And the states, some of the Canadian provinces also have 10-cent refund values now, and they have high return rates. Let me go back here a second. And then finally, there's the 80% goal, and that's the key involved effect of that is if we stay up at least at 80% recovery of these containers, we're going to achieve significant environmental benefits. And that's what the next slide is supposed to be demonstrating, is what are the environmental benefits that we can get out of this if we fully implement the law? And to do this, I did some modeling of showing how return rates have been falling over the period of time, what we expect to happen in the future for the different containers, for all the types of what recycling could go on, and compare that to what would happen projecting if we followed the requirements of SB 2184, which included the 80% goal. And what we have here are two things. I looked 20 years into the future from the implementation date when everything would be fully implemented in 2013. And so over that 20-year period, we would expect that it would have an additional over 100,000 tons of aluminum being recycled per year, which is 5,000 tons per year. And for anybody who's talking about greenhouse gases, they will know that we think of aluminum as being solidified electricity, essentially. It's a high-energy material. And so that's going to have a significant impact on the on energy savings and on greenhouse gases. Plastics, we'd expect another 8,000 tons a year to be recycled. And glass, we'd expect another 27,000 tons a year to be recycled. The equivalent of this is 1.6 trillion BTUs of energy saved. That's 1.6 million million, which works out to about, if you put that in equivalent of gasoline, which, of course, a lot of this energy is in forms other than gasoline, but if you put it in terms of gasoline, that would be about 13 million gallons per year. Again, these are per-year things multiplied by 20 for what would be over the whole course of the year. That's the equivalent of 25,000 cars driving average mileage in the state. And as far as the metric tons of carbon dioxide saved, it would be about 100,000 tons, which may be not a large number compared to some of the other sorts of things we can do for saving greenhouse gases, but certainly is a significant tonnage. Again, the original bill was passed as a litter law, and this slide might be a little bit dramatic, but it actually came out of, I think it was about 1974, a group that went out and picked up litter in two states and compared on five different mile highways. You know, that, again, how the bill was sold originally, and maybe the litter difference isn't quite as large as this indicates, but certainly, you know, I actually did a litter study myself back then, and we found about four times higher higher littering rate for beverage containers in Washington as in Oregon. I was did that for the Institute for Environmental Studies at the University of Washington back in that period. But this is really what the bottle bill is also about. It's about producing clean, recyclable material. When you take up back containers under the bottle bill, you don't think of taking a Pyrex bowl and sticking it through a reverse vending machine. You don't think of taking a water glass and or a table glass and sticking that in, things that are incompatible with glass recycling. You know, it just doesn't happen. The sort of materials you get out of a bottle bill are nice, clean materials. You don't have ceramics. You don't have the loss of materials from sorting that you see when you're trying to sort out a single stream program. As people know, we put all these recyclables together in one big container, and then we try through a combination of machinery and sample hand sorting. People that are reaching into this pile, pulling out things, you know, risking themselves, puncturing themselves on broken glass as it's going down the line. That's the way we do our sorting. And they basically miss materials. It's really hard to get everything. Close to 20% of the plastic bottles that people are properly preparing for their curbside programs and putting out are ending up going off with newspaper to a newsprint mill where they eventually get basically destroyed and disposed. So, and then the other key thing is that you don't get the glass contamination of other materials like we have, that a significant amount of glass currently goes back mixed in with newspaper and it causes significant problems at paper mills. So that's my total.
Thanks very much, Peter. Other questions for the
PQ? Sorry, Bob wants to jump in. Okay, and then
can
we'll get
can I just wrap up quickly?
Yeah, quick wrap up.
As we've looked at the bill after the task force finished its work, there are a couple simple improvements that we would at some point like to talk about with the committee in the form of amendments. For instance, Section 1 requires DEQ to establish like a container rate each year, but we would need a simple reporting requirement to make that happen. We also, I think, need a clear language on how to deal with containers coming from out of state. Right now, if that was to be enforced in any way, you'd have to use a general fraud statute in ORS 135, and it would be really awkward to have to go through the local DA just to deal with the out-of-state containers. We've also realized there needs to be probably an exemption for schools and snack bars and other places that don't even charge a deposit when they sell water or something else. So there's some smaller fixes I think we can come up with and reach agreement on pretty quickly. Even though the redemption rate is lots better than curbside or anything else, it has fallen some, but it really has highlighted that we really need quickly a statewide system of redemption centers. Luckily, there is the unredeemed deposits available, and we now think that for 2009, that's in the range of $20 to $30 million a year. I'm fearful having that not locked up to go to redemption centers. The industry has stepped forward and said, yes, they want to contribute the unredeemed deposits to build the redemption centers, but I think it would be best to have that locked in there so that money doesn't end up going somewhere else. The industry has presented a very strong plan to build the 90 redemption centers. The problem is the process for approving that in existing state law is very time-consuming, slow, and costly, and I think we need a streamlined process so the industry can build the redemption centers quickly. So with that, a few changes in this bill, we are on the edge of a model bottle bill, and it's really exciting.
Thank you, Bob. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I ask Bob a question, I just wanted to go back to your slide with the Washington stack. And are you aware how much water the Washington state of Washington is taking out of the Columbia, and do you think there's an effect on the number of water bottles? Probably mixing the issue. We'll move on.
The new crowd, they weren't here during that hearing.
Is mine working? I appreciated, this question's really for you, Mr. Danko. I appreciated Representative Berger's testimony. I actually could have used it last session, but you both assert that, you know, the government is hands-off, but I'm wondering, are you considering, you know, there's an old cliche in this building, an unfunded mandate, and I'm looking at your summary, and you say, number one, there's phrases like DEQ to determine, then we move down, OLCC the authority to establish, gives OLCC the authority, requires DEQ. So you're not getting a piece of this. I understand that. You're not in the money stream. But to say the government sort of is hands-off and allowing this thing to work beautifully, I think sort of is plausible deniability mandate. Do you have a comment about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I happen to sit next to Peter, and over the last, how long? You know, many, many years, Peter has been answering questions and trying to, you know, keep the bottle mill on an even keel. So we don't have any direct responsibility, but you're right. We do spend some existing staff time on that. It falls under our, you know, our usual recycling work. But, yes, right, it does take some staff time. And I think OLCC, who's going to testify next, will tell you that they spend some staff time on it, too. So we're not denying that we spend some time on it. And Peter, I think, would love to have less calls trying to explain the issues about the bottle bill.
If I could add just one thing, though, up until this recent activity relating to the bills and, you know, starting with SB 707, I'd say the time I spent on bottle bill was probably on the order of maybe 3 or 4% of my time. It was very small, and most of that was actually spent talking to people out of state, calling up wondering, how's the bottle bill work in Oregon anyway? It wasn't calls from in-state. It was calls from out of state.
Quick follow-up. I appreciate the answer, but I wasn't really trying to get at the hours or FTEs. It's just the idea that somehow government, is not part of this and it's working beautifully. I think government is very much part of it from the beginning, from 71 till now, and I think we don't want to gloss over that.
Great, Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The various problems, I think, the various challenges I think we have to address when dealing with a bottle bill are numerous, and I won't cover them all, obviously, but let me pick one. One way to think about it is sort of a dollar menu challenge. So when I go through my district, I have lots of fast food restaurants, right, which I enjoy but am opposed to. And the and they have dollar menus. Right? And I have wondered what the lifespan is of the dollar menu. Because eventually, you know, you're not going to be able to have a double cheeseburger for a dollar because the dollars ought to be $5. And what are they going to do about the dollar menu? Are we going to have a $2 menu? And it's a similar problem that we've had this nickel. And the nickel's been magic. And 6 cents doesn't make any damn sense. And 7 cents doesn't make any sense either. Nobody's going to do 7 1/4 cents. So it's like, but then you want to make a dime. And that sort of seems like a lot of money, right? That's like a dollar menu to a $2 menu. And how do you do that? That's something I'm wrestling with, and you're thinking about that, and, you know, helping us think that through would be helpful. My question is this: what's a nickel worth? You know, what's a 1972 nickel or 1971 nickel now? I don't think I saw it in your slide, and neither did my friend.
It's about 26 cents as far as buying power. Although some people would point out that beverages as a whole have not gone up nearly as fast as prices have gone up. But if you use the standard inflation figures, it'd be about 26 cents.
26 cents. And how much was a Pepsi in 1971? And you could pick your favorite beverage.
That I couldn't tell you right off. I don't have that information.
Okay. All right. I have other questions, but I can ask other people.
Great. Anything else for these two gentlemen? I'm sure they'll stick around, and we'll be hearing from them more at some later time. Thank you both very much. Look, the only way I know how to do this, because we've got, I don't know, 25 people or so signed up, is to get out the little clock, stick it at 3, and ask people to keep their comments very, very brief. So this is it's a simple bill, but a complex subject, and I think no one knows that any better than John Anderson, who will join Paul Cosgrove and Thomas Irwin from OLCC at our next panel. I know you guys are coming from different places with different views perhaps on this bill, but I am going to ask, I will be bringing people forward on panels. And John, well, whoever gets there first maybe can start, unless you have a preferred order. Tom, I think you may be it.
By the computer?
You do, is it yours?
No, it's not mine. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tom Irwin. I'm the Government Affairs Communications Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm happy to be here this afternoon to talk about Senate Bill 707 and House Bill 2184. Your committee administrator asked me to kind of address, first of all, the implementation of Senate Bill 707 and with the expansion of bottled water to the bottle bill. And I'm happy to do that. For some committees' edification, they may not know that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission has always had the enforcement responsibilities of the bottle bill. And so for the last 37 or 36 and a half years, however many years that is, we have had that authority and responsibility under our umbrella. And obviously with the expansion of Senate Bill 707 and adding bottled water, that certainly created some issues for us in terms of the resource and the time demands that were just alluded to by Representative Gilliam in his previous comments. But let me get on with how I think we've been doing and how the state has been doing in terms of implementation. My testimony has given you some indication that we've met with the industry several times in 2008, over 25 industry members and distributors and grocers to talk about some of the various issues involved in labeling and marketing and getting the product on the shelves. And those were very good meetings. We appreciated that. The Department of Environmental Quality and Department of Agriculture were also at the table with us in those discussions. We issued a letter.
Tom, I'm sorry, but especially given our short timing, I'm going to ask you to, and we have your written testimony,
sure.
I'm going to ask you to address 2184.
You bet.
And what it would mean to add liquor containers as proposed by the bill.
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chair. Adding the distilled spirits as the proposal to House Bill 2184 is indicating does create some issues for the state, I believe, and for obviously our liquor agents. And let me address some of those. The majority of our, I think we have 243 liquor stores across the state currently. The majority of those stores are substantially less than 5,000 square feet. Space is an issue for most of those stores. They particularly, as it relates to inventory, they already have a difficult time making certain that they can have distilled spirit products in their small amount of space. That is going to be an issue in terms of where we put if consumers bring back the returns to the liquor stores. We don't know where they're going to bring it back at this point. They could be bringing it back to redemption centers instead of liquor stores, but if liquor stores are part of that equation, it does present some problems. 72% of the sales of distilled spirits are to individual consumers, and 28% go to licensees. And so that's part of that equation that we also need to take into consideration what happens when the distilled spirit bottle goes to a bar, a tavern, et cetera.
And if you could wrap it up.
Oh, sure, Mr. Chair. I just wanted you to know that if depending on what kind of model was used in terms of how distilled spirits is captured in the equation, it does present some significant resource issues for the state, and we've indicated that in some of the fiscal impacts, but that's only one model. There are other models, too. So with that, I can end my conversation and have individual conversations with representatives, if that's what your desire is.
Thanks very much. And John, I was beginning to give you a great introduction. I mean, I think it does bear repeating that this bill looks amazingly simple, given the kind of amount of complexity that's involved in the system that the public doesn't see, that the task force, including I, came to understand over the months that we worked on this. And John Anderson is right, really at the center of the back room that the public doesn't see that helps make this work, along with many hundreds of retailers and the distributors that you work with. So thank you for your work on the issue, John, and we'll let you go at it.
Okay, well, thank you, Chair Cannon and members of the committee, and I'm going to blow my testimony here because I've got a three-minute window to talk 10 minutes quickly. So for the record, my name is John Anderson. I'm president of the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, otherwise known as OBRC. We are a new entity that came into existence January 1st of this year. We have approximately 55 members of the beverage industry that have formed the cooperative. Those members are principally involved in beverage distribution in the state of Oregon. We currently are servicing, let me just say, we are providing service really in three ways related to the bottle bill. One is the collection of deposits from distributors when they sell into the market, and then the refunding of those same deposits to the grocery retailers at the time of pickup. We also then go out and pick up, do the physical pickup of the containers at the stores, and we bring those back to processing locations. And then we also sell the scrap material for the distributors of the co-op, the aluminum, PET, and glass, and also other byproducts. We, as I said, we have about 55 members. Those members represent 95% of the bottle bill containers that are sold into the state. So the vast majority of all beverage containers covered under the bottle bill are part of our co-op now. We're servicing nearly 3,000 grocery store locations. We do this with about 170 employees statewide, over 200 pieces of rolling stock, and we are operating out of six different facilities, one in Portland, one in Eugene, one in Coos Bay, Medford, Bend, and Pendleton. So we have been in operation now for 2 months. I would share Chair Cannon's statement that this is simple but complex. It's been very challenging. I'm happy with our progress to date, but I'm also increasingly aware of all of the challenges that Senate Bill 707 have brought into the implementation of Oregon's bottle bill. I'd hope that it was simpler than it has turned out to be. And it's not anything I don't think we can overcome, but it certainly affected my position on where I think the bottle bill should go and the timing. And so I just quickly moved to House Bill 2184 and my thoughts on that. I would commend the task force for the work that they did, Chair Kopetsky and certainly Representative Cannon and Senator Haas. A lot of good work there that I supported, and I think you know I did. We had conversations privately about that. And so I think the task force recommendations and converted into House Bill 2184 have certain merit, no question about it. But I'm concerned about the timing. I think it's too much too soon, and being the boots on the ground responsible person for handling 95% of these bottle bill containers, I can tell you that I don't feel real good about any changes in the short term. And just specifically, the two biggies that I am concerned about, the the increase from 5 cents to 10 cents, I think that is based on a redemption rate that is known and agreed to be too low. I don't know that we know the redemption rate. I know I don't yet. I will. But I don't know it yet, and I don't think that there's public policy that's come out and said, here's what the redemption rate should be. So I think setting a certain date for raising the deposit is premature, and then the expansion into additional containers. I think everybody that is involved in the day-to-day bottle bill recognizes now that the system's maxed. With water and flavored water as of January 2009, we're maxed. We've got no room in the stores. Our facilities are overflowing. And so we need time to put infrastructure into place. And that's partly what we're doing as we look into this pilot project with redemption centers. And that we hope to bring back to the 2011 legislature really with some answers to these questions. What type of infrastructure did we add? Do we think we can add through the redemption center process, and what do we think it looks like as we move forward? So I'm not opposed to much of what's in 2184, as I think most in the industry would agree with me. It's just a matter of timing. 2 years from now, this bill looks a lot better than it does today.
Thank you very much. Paul.
Chair Cannon, thank you very much. My name is Paul Cosgrove. I'm here before you on behalf of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States. DISCUS is the representative organization for the national and international manufacturers of distilled spirits. And with Hasina Squire's permission, I'm also supporting the view of Hood River Distillers, which is Oregon's largest distiller. We also have a whole group of micro distillers. We all know about microbrewers, but we have a whole group of micro distillers in the state. It's an emerging industry. I just want to add two or three comments to what Mr. Irwin said about the special issues involved with distilled spirits and adding them to the bottle bill. You've heard about how distributors are a crucial part of the bottle bill and the expanded bottle bill. They are the folks primarily who are running the current and expanded system. The distributor in distilled spirits is the state of Oregon. Most of you may not know that the ownership of that bottle of distilled spirits is in the state of Oregon until you take it from the shelf and take it to the cash register. So that the costs of running either this kind of a co-op or of handling them in the stores or of helping to fund a redemption center will fall back on the state of Oregon. That's one issue. The second issue is the distilled spirit system is an extraordinarily profitable retail system. Over $300 million of profits flow to the state and its local governments each biennium through this system. We have either the highest or second highest, depending on the year, markup in distilled spirits. We're at $19.27 on average per gallon. Washington State, a few cents more at the moment. It doesn't take very many lost sales to having to change shelf space to return space in a liquor store to have a significant revenue impact. So in addition to the costs you've heard about, with us, it's also a revenue issue, lost revenue from lost sales. So I just bring those as issues for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Questions, Representative Berger?
This is really more of a comment than a question. I think it's a very enlightening to know that the state can make money without a tax in some areas, and I appreciate that. The question is, how come you're second? Can you figure out a way to get to be first again?
Mr. Chair and Senator Barnhart, we have a very high markup in distilled spirits. I just give you one example. There are Baccarat Crystal bottles of expensive cognac in OLCC stores that are retailing for something like $1,800, and over half of that, they sell, by the way, people do buy them, is going to the state of Oregon. We get a lot of money. There's obviously an issue. You go too high, you start to lose sales. So we would appreciate just staying at second like Avis. We're happy there.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
I should also note for the record that based on our new ethics rules, even a shot glass of that would probably now not be allowed to share, which was my suggestion that I decided not to make, given that. How much money? I think I heard 20 to 30 million in unredeemed deposits that goes somewhere. I think it stays with distributors. I'm still learning the flow chart, but I think I got it. Is that number right, and who gets the money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I don't think that number is even close.
Yeah.
We'll know the number probably in middle of 2010, but nobody knows it now. There's a lot of guesstimation that's gone into it, but frankly, I'd be shocked if it was anywhere near that. I can tell you unaudited numbers, but for January, so our first full month that we've been through, we're $94,000 over-redeemed statewide. So we're already behind if we're going to get to 30 million.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yep.
And the other, and maybe this is more of a comment, but it does seem, my fear is that I would have heard, had I been here before, similar testimony from folks representing your august organizations 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. My fear is maybe also 5 years from now, that any time we wanted to turn a nickel into a dime, which is really the only step up, because we couldn't do 6 cents or 7 cents or 8 cents, right? That we're gonna have to address sort of the same challenge. It's never going to be fun to go from a nickel to 10 cents. And so my sort of question is, and maybe it's not a question, I guess it is just sort of a comment. That's my fear. Feel free to respond to it. Like, if there's an answer, the answer I know is not now. My fear is the answer will always be not now, because it's not fun to go from a nickel to a dime. And maybe that's not the part you're worried about, but I'm at least thinking about it.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I think that's a good point, and I'm not new to the industry. I've been involved in it for 15 years, but I'm new in a leadership position, or moderately new now, and I can say that, yeah, I believe that the redemption value is a tool to raise rates, and I've been saying for 18 months, and I would say now, if you determine a goal that you believe that we should achieve, and we don't achieve that goal, then I would sit back here and say that one tool to achieve that is raising the rate. But simply having a discussion on raising the rate because it seems like a nickel's not worth as much as it was.
Well, that isn't.
It isn't.
Seem
no
like
question
it.
About it.
Yeah.
But we have to determine whether how much, if any, it has impacted the redemption rate in the state.
Thank you.
John, you presented to the task force a plan for an industry-run series of redemption centers, ultimately 90 centers statewide, that would help take the pressure off grocery stores. What kind of progress have you made towards establishing redemption centers?
Well, Mr. Chair, good question. We are definitely making progress. We have potentially identified two locations where we would like to begin our pilot project. We've met with Mr. Irwin and his folks at the OLCC regarding approval of an application. Internally, we have hired a project manager. OBRC has hired a project manager to spearhead this, and beginning very soon, in fact, next week, be spending some time in Maine with some folks that run redemption centers up there that I've seen before, and I like their model. And so I would say within a very short period of time, we should have a couple up and running, or that's our hope.
So let me try to get you to be just a little more precise. When we're back here in 2011 having these conversations, how many redemption centers do you expect that will be operating statewide?
I believe our goal would be up to four.
Up
by
to
2011.
So you expect to have somewhere between one and four redemption centers operating by 2011. How about 2013? Is it possible to project?
I really feel like I'd like to see these one to four, and I think, you know, we'll be probably realistically two to three. I would like to see those in place and let the 2011 legislature make the decision as to their success. I think much of what's being discussed hinges on a very significant change in how Oregon's bottle bill is seen in the public's eye, will be how these redemption centers take effect. So, absolutely, I think the goal isn't at the stage I'm at is to get data and then see what public policy directions go from that data.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to another panel, and I'm going to call four folks up. One person might have to stay in the on-deck circle, or maybe can bring a chair forward. But Eric Forrest, Joe Gilliam, Drew Hagedorn, Hasina Squires, if you could. Eric, do you want to begin? That would give me my opportunity to say Eric was a
do
task
I want to begin?
Yes. One of several other task force members who will be testifying today. Eric, I think, at every meeting, making the trip often from Eugene to be there, and knows this bottle bill inside and out from his position working right in the trenches on it. So appreciate your contributions, Eric.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, representatives. Again, for the record, my name is Eric Forrest. I'm co-president of MLF Group, which manages Pepsi franchises in Lane, Lincoln, Coos, Curry, Douglas, and Deschutes County. Just as a matter of information, I'm also a past president, current board member of the Oregon Soft Drink Association, and a board member in Oregon Beverage Recyclers Cooperative. And additionally, I was a member on the legislative task force that worked on Senate Bill 707, and as Chair Cannon mentioned, the governor's task force on the bottle bill. As I was writing testimony, and I'm glad I cut it short, I spent last night and 4 hours in a school board meeting listening to this type of testimony, so I will try to get to bullet points quickly. The first thing I would ask is that I would hope that each and every one of you would read the minority report from the governor's task force on the bottle bill. I, of course, participate in that minority report, and I think it has a lot of salient points as to what's been brought up today and a few other items about this current expansion of the bottle bill, the formation of OBRC. And so please, if you would, take time to look at that. To me, as a business owner, I today am 6 weeks into a new 50-plus member business. That's this OBRC that we're talking about today. Signed the paperwork probably December 30th and got that paperwork in. We've got this business up and running, as John has eloquently stated, touching every corner of the state, every grocery store, every convenience store in the state, and trying to figure out how to make this work with the combination of what were a couple cooperatives and bottlers around the state of Oregon who may do as little as less than $1 million a year in sales, that are now part of this huge statewide venture and trying to understand what that means to them. And when folks have said that was a Herculean effort, I would say, John, to some extent, I would never tell him this face-to-face, but I guess he's our Hercules, because he took on a lot to get that done. And frankly, had a lot of meetings with attorneys with him.
Mr. Forrest, just a minute.
Yes.
The chair would entertain a motion to accept the minority report.
I thought you would have passed our bottle bill by now.
So with that, there's been a lot of convincing, working together with distributors, with grocery store chains. To think that I'm now a partner in a business with Walmart is something I never thought the day that I would see. It's totally different for us. And again, we're 6 weeks into that. So I think we have a lot to learn. And as I was in the same school board meeting last night, a teacher talked about a new school that was coming together. And he talked about building an airplane while flying it. And I think that's a great metaphor for us to think about. Right now, we're building this airplane and we're flying at the same time. And I was thankful, as before this meeting started, and talking with Bob Danko, saying, looks like it's going pretty smoothly. No hiccups. And that's amazing that we've put this business together with all these partners and that it's working and the consumer is able to take these water bottles back. The bottle bill was what it was for 37 years. As we said, it was simple elegance. It was basically a mousetrap that worked. And now we're trying to tweak that mousetrap. We hope it's going to work. But we have no data. From a business perspective, we don't have first quarter results. So to me, I must admit it's baffling to think about changing it already when I haven't even seen a financial statement. And that's what we're talking about doing today. And so in today's economic times, it's really hard to think about that. I mean, half the businesses fail in the first 5 years. We've just set up a new business the whole state's counting on.
I'm going to ask you to finish up, Eric. Thanks.
I will be quick, but I have to say I'm living this right now, so I have some passion about it. So in conclusion, I would ask you, as you consider this and other bills, businesses like mine around the state are facing economic pressures, significant economic pressures right now. I look at our full-line vending business, which supplies these packages. We're down 30% because we have, in our Eugene Springfield area, we've lost 3,000 jobs in the last 6 months. When you think of the closures that are going on, and I'm trying to keep people employed and moving forward and create this new business and make things happen that work for this state. And so I would ask that you consider that when you look at things that create uncertain times and uncertainty in business, and consider that as you look at making changes in a bill that was the way it was for 37 years. We've changed it for 6 weeks, and now we're talking about changing again. I just want to convey the fact that it does make one uncomfortable.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Northwest Grocery Association. Mr. Chair, you made me revisit the fear I had when my mom would leave the house and say, Vic, you're in charge. thank you for returning. You all know what it's like at Thanksgiving at my home now. I want to state for the record, I think Representative Berger left, but I hope she's listening in her office. I am lockstep with Representative Berger on her opinions on this bill. The task force did a great job in debating and massaging what we know today, the ideas that were put into it. Everybody there gave their all, took a lot of time out of their day to do a volunteer effort. So in no way is my directness going to meant to belittle the task force at all, but I want to be direct with you just so I can get you within your 3 minutes to understand where we're coming from. First off, we can do this. It's been a major effort. John Anderson deserves a lot of credit. You can't believe the details. I know you've heard it before, but you can't believe the details he's put together in 18 months. Bringing our folks to the table, a little bit of marriage counseling, and things are kind of we're kicked off, and we can't do this. There are a lot of details left to be discovered and to be put into place. What you need to make a good decision is good, hard data. What you've been presented today is data that is the best that's available, but it doesn't give you the data you need to make these kind of decisions that are in the bill. In 18 months, I believe we'll be able to give you much firmer data and much broader data than you've ever had before. No one's been able to figure the redemption rate other than doing waste studies, because that's the only way to do it. For the first time ever, because of John's work, you're going to have a co-op right now covering about 96% of all the industry. The numbers are going to be in one place instead of being in eight or nine places. You're going to have that data to go forward. You're going to have data on how people are going to react to Senate Bill 707 expansion. You're going to have data on how people are going to react to going to Redemption Center. We have some great ideas. We have some great ideas to make Redemption Center work different than any other bottle room that we've ever operated, and we operate thousands around the state. But there's going to be ideas of customer service, how to streamline the system, how to get people in, get people out. Are there financial incentives? How do we control fraud? What's it mean to have a full-time man place that's outside the food area? We got a lot of things that we can do and be creative. What we need the most is flexibility, a little bit of time, and a streamlined process to get these redemption centers up and running so we can report back to you. We've been running bottle rooms for 37 years. There's not a lot we need to really present to say, hey, we think we can do this if we consolidate bottle rooms. There's not a lot of magic here other than the ability to go out, give us some basic goals. We're going to be shooting at 80%, and come back and let us tell you how it's going.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Drew Hagedorn for the Oregon Wine Growers Association, testifying in opposition to Section 2B, which would add wine containers to Oregon's deposit law. The Wine Growers Association feels that Oregon's bottle bill doesn't work very well with our industry. Our distribution channels, we principally self-distribute directly to our consumers in Oregon and throughout the United States. Coupled with our low sales volumes, in addition to the type of containers we sell, they're not single-serve containers like a beverage container for water or soda, indicates to us that this might be a tough fit for our industry. I appreciated the DEQ's chart and data from 2005, which indicated a recycling rate in 2005 of just under 70%. That's just a hair below the 80% aspirational goal stipulated by Section 1. We feel that's no surprise. Our consumers generally have our beverages that we sell at a restaurant, or they consume them in the home, and that's why we think a more prudent approach to the wine container would be to enhance curbside recycling programs as well as commercial recycling programs. So I think also I would echo some of the remarks of others today that we ought to move circumspectly as we move forward so that we don't break the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? We've heard, I do have a question. We've heard conflicting data regarding the redemptions and underwater bottles, sort of what that level is and how much an unredeemed might be out there. Is it, and I think this is primarily directed to you, Eric, is it your impression or your belief that that data will be available to folks like us when you get, you know, your first month or your first quarter results in?
To be honest, I'd have to ask John in terms of what timing we think we would have that. He will be the keeper of the data.
I wouldn't want to release anything until after it's been audited. We're just working with a lot of different.
My hunch is, if I, from a marketer standpoint, when you look at data, I would think that the first quarter would be pretty inaccurate data in terms of the populace getting used to the water bottles being in this redemptive process, and I would think we would want some smoothing to see how things are going once the consumer's up and running and understanding what's been happening.
Okay. Joe, you might have a comment on that. My other question, and it's more to you, is that so under the current bottle bill, under the bottle bill enacted in 1971, retailers have had the option of creating redemption centers and therefore getting themselves off the hook for in-store redemption. And that hasn't happened, at least not successfully. What should give us confidence that the grocers, along with the co-op, will move forward with this system of redemption centers, given, you know, given the fact the incentives, I'm not sure the incentives have really changed. So what should make us confident that you'll be taking this on?
Mr. Chair, that's a very fair question. Actually, the incentive and the ability has changed dramatically. When we talk about this backroom change of doing this, the biggest change by going to a single co-op around the state where all the nickels can be accounted for and exchanged back and forth allows us now to set up a redemption center and sets up a method for, let's say you take four stores and you put them into one redemption center and consolidate them down. All the accounting now is centrally located, and those nickels can be passed back and forth, and fees can be charged in order to run the redemption center. Because the retailer is going to have to pay out of their pocket to make sure you keep the lights on, that there's personnel, that there's a building, that there's a lease. We're going to pay for that service. Before, when it was all in different pots of money, no one wanted to pay in to get this to happen. So the very nature of doing the all brands, going to all stores, the crisscross of brands, Fred Meyer going to Safeway, Safeway going to Albertsons and the whole thing, and adding water, now it makes sense to put it into a redemption center, pay a fee for that to happen, because now the accounting process is extremely difficult and has to be centralized to work. If we tried to do it in the old system, it just wouldn't work. So you've kind of given us the platform to force people in to say, this is better than it was, and so they'll pay the money to do it.
Thanks.
And I might add one thing that Joe's not mentioning, too, and it's business. We're partners now. The grocers in this Oregon Beverage Recyclers Co-op, the grocers are a partner, the distributors are a partner. They want to get redemption centers going. Our partners want redemption centers to happen. Therefore, in working with our customers and our partners, we both have a mutual benefit in making this thing happen. That's really, I don't want that to get lost in what we've talked mm-hmm. about. With all of us working together in this cooperative, there's give and take in this operation, and that's why that's going to have to happen.
It's a very significant undertaking. I think those of us who have spent time with this recognize just how phenomenal the effort's been over the last year to bring this together. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you all say one more thing about this schedule? I appreciate the excitement of the change in the platform, but for rural folks, you can imagine how unexciting it is for us to think of four redemption centers in 4 years on the coast in Ontario and Eugene, Silverton, and Pendleton. Tell us, is that a pretty good idea of where we're going? Because our rural folks are going to have to wait, it sounds like.
I'm speaking somewhat for John, but in the task force, I talked about this, and I'm involved in another business where we've started one, and now we're into our second, and it's a car wash business where you need to have a model, right? And you have to make sure the model works, and you have to get feedback from the customer before you make the investment in another piece of dirt. And dirt in Oregon, obviously probably falling right now, but if you were to try to spend $25 to $30 a foot to find 25,000 square feet to site a redemption center on, you want to make sure you're making the investment wisely. So you've got to get a few set up, understand the consumer take, what they think about it, before you go ahead and scale that. It would be, to me, somewhat similar to opening up a fast food chain. You don't open up 40 at once without ever having done your first meal. And so we've got to work through this process to make sure, because otherwise we're going to fail. And so our goal is to succeed in this, and so we've got to have a few and make them work.
Representative Smith.
So it sounded good, and I thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounded good, and I understand it's going to take a little while. We got to test it before we scale it, but I still don't know the answer to the question. So give me sort of a sense of how many we think we're going to get in terms of redemption centers, because it's sort of hard. You know, Representative Berger had the thing. Well, we don't have people driving over to Portland from Vancouver. Senator Haas said, well, do we really want people in their cars driving too? You know, really a lot of times too far. So I think the numerosity, the frequency, the nearness of redemption that probably matters. So what's sort of the, you know, how many of these things we think we're going to get? How close together?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we're estimating right now about 90. Now, that is based on...
In the state.
In the state, based on population and sales data, knowing where the beverages are being sold, looking at redemption numbers that are today, and how you can...
So it's, it's like one and a half per house district.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now...
So I don't think that's enough.
Now, there are going to be areas that will never be serviced by a redemption center because the dollars, you can't make the dollars work. You can't financially put it together. There are going to be rural areas that won't be served by a redemption center because there's not enough volume to serve a redemption center, and there's going to be return to retail. It'll be the old model.
Yeah.
These 90 redemption centers are focused on trying to do financial plans to say what breaks even. So there's certain volumes you have to get to make one of these things even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the economy has changed. We first looked at it. Leases may be a little cheaper. We might get a little break in terms of property right now. But we also have to, you know, we have to look at not only distance to a store or the stores. We have to look at arterials and collectors. Yeah. How do people get in and out of these? I could put one across from three grocery stores. But if I got a median going down the middle and you can't make a left turn out of there, it's probably not a very good place for a redemption center. Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, we'll
put together... 90 is a helpful answer.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
We need to move on. So, thank you very much for your time. Hasina, if you could join. I overlooked Callie Daly on the list from Northwest Food Processors. If you are in the room and could join us here as well, that would be great. And then let me ask that Jerry Powell, Suzanne Johansson, and Jeff Murray be on deck to testify next. And, folks, I think it's very likely. I'm going to try hard to stick to this three-minute limit. I'm going to assume that there will be some need to carry this over our schedule, assuming that folks who are signing up here still are interested in testifying, because we will get out of here at 5 o'clock today, and that's going to require probably stopping short of the complete list. So if you are certain that, you know, you've come a long ways today and are unlikely to be able to make it back next week, then please let me know. I'm trying to note those people as we go. Hasina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Hasina Squires, for the record, and representing the Wine Institute, which represents 970 California wineries. I'll be very brief as I possibly can. Our association is committed to environmental stewardship. We have a sustainable wine growing program that provides information to our wineries on conserving natural resources and protecting the environment. We're here today in opposition of House Bill 2184. We believe Oregon's resources are better dedicated to a comprehensive curbside recycling program. As Drew pointed out, our consumers are recycling wine bottles at a very high rate, 70% already. If we're going to add a 5 or 10 or 25-cent deposit onto a wine bottle, I don't think it's going to incent any person who drinks a bottle of wine to drag it to the store or to Joe's Redemption Center to recycle it, Joe and his compatriots. I'd also point out that wine bottles make up about 2% of the total container waste stream, so they don't really create a litter problem. I can't remember the last time I drove down the road and saw a wine bottle on the side of the road. Most maybe a McDonald's wrapper, but probably not a wine bottle. And I'd just like to point out one additional thing. As Mr. Cosgrove indicated, I represent Hood River Distillers and also oppose the addition of liquor bottles into the bottle bill. One out of every four bottles that is sold in the state of Oregon is a Hood River Distillers brand. We do not have any Baccarat Crystal, and if we did, I'd probably be pretty excited about that. But I would just encourage you to thoroughly review OLCC's testimony. We're a strong partner with OLCC, and there are some implementation and funding issues that OLCC will need if this bill is going to move forward. We would hate to damage the revenue stream to the state of Oregon for the distilled spirit sales.
Thank you. Ms. Daly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Callie Daly, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Northwest Food Processors Association. As you know, food processing is the third largest manufacturing sector in Oregon. And just last month, the Oregon Employment Department announced that food processing was the only industrial sector to add jobs in the last year. So I just want to put in my public service announcement for my guys real quick to say we're strong in Oregon and we're excited to be here. And in these economic times, I think it's kind of nice to hear a little good news. In terms of the bottle bill, I will be real brief with my comments. First and foremost, we support curbside recycling. We think it's effective. We think that it is easy for consumers. And at the end of the day, as manufacturers, that's what we care about is consumers and wanting to make sure that things are easy for them. Expansion at this point in time, we think there's still some hiccups in the system, and we want to make sure that all of those hiccups get out. The water bottles, the labeling isn't consistent. There's a lot of concern about, is this one in, is this one out? As you look at water bottles, it's a little difficult to actually see the OR 5 cents right now, and that concerns us. Again, will consumers buy the products because they're going to get choosy about what's in and what's out? So we would really urge you all to ask yourself the question, is expansion right at this time? Is it something that we should wait and see how the program works? And what can we learn from this experience and look at it again in the next biennium to make the process better again for the consumers? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very quick question, Mr. Chair.
Smith.
What about little liquor bottles? So, and I don't mean the little, and I'm not being silly, I don't mean the little airplane ones, but is there, so Mike's Lard Lemonade, is that, factual question, is that currently covered under the bottle bill?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. Let's go next, Jerry Powell, Suzanne Johansson, Jeff Murray.
There, okay, all of them.
If you would make your way up, and two more members of the task force, I think we'll, practically all of us will get our word in here before the day is over.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Powell. I had the pleasure, I'm not sure, of serving on the legislative task force. I'm a Portland businessman. I own three magazines. I've edited the only magazine in municipal recycling for nearly 30 years. And I've written more probably on curbside recycling and bottle bills than likely anybody in America. So I'm an old hack, and I've been an ink-stained wretch, and I've been doing it for a long time. I testified for the 71 bill. I support this bill. Expansion will work. It works in Western Canada. I've seen it, this exact system that John and his phenomenal team have put together. It works in Maine. It will work here because the quality of the beverage co-op that Eric Forrest and John Anderson described to you. It is remarkable, the industry's response, and we should get out of the way and let them do the job. I'd also like to say, though, however, listening to several comments already about recycling, curbside recycling, there are people here today, right beside me is one of the experts in curbside recycling in Oregon. The bottle bill helps curbside recycling. If we expand the bottle bill, you will make our current curbside program, collection program, better. There is a paper mill in Oregon City, that's all recycled paper. It receives 10 tons per week of glass in the paper. That's why if you expand the bottle bill, you'll also help curbside recycling. And I'm available to answer any questions, but it was a pleasure to serve on the task force, Representative Cannon, John Kopetsky, and the rest, and also Suzanne Johansson.
Great. Jeff or Suzanne?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Johansson. I was also a member of the task force. I'm a financial planner from Bend, though I'm thinking about going back into recycling now, given that my current occupation. The issue is that the current system is not working fine. And as one of the citizen members of the committee, you know, if you go out and take your containers to the store, as you heard from the chair, it's not working well now. And the committee has spent a long time looking at what was going on in recycling, what was going on with the redemption rates, and the redemption rates have been coming down, and what can we do to fix it. And after a year of work and a lot of testimony, we set up a systematic approach to addressing the problems. The first part was to start the implementation of redemption centers starting in 2009. We know, though we don't know a number and there was discussion today, but we know that there is money from the unredeemed deposits that can help to fund the creation of these redemption centers. The task force was told that was between $13 and $15 million a year in unredeemed deposits. So there is some money there to be able to build these redemption centers and get them started. We can't build all 90 of them right away. It's going to take time to build some, get them working, and build on the success of the initial ones. We also set up a timeline for increasing the deposit. We talked about that current value of the nickel would be 25 cents or 26 cents. We thought that was probably too far to go, but we thought that the redemption rate, the value needed to be enough to encourage people to participate so that we didn't see a continuing decline in the participation rates. We're starting to see containers on the sides of roads again because people don't value a nickel as a deposit as enough of an incentive to bring the container back. Expanding the containers was set off until 2013 so that we had these redemption centers that are being built now, have time to build, have time to get the experience. People will have a chance to see the success before we increase the containers that people will bring in. But it's hard for someone to understand why a juice that is carbonated, slightly carbonated, has a deposit, but a juice that doesn't. You're drinking a juice, you go to it, some have a deposit, some don't. Our suggestion was all containers, and so you know if it's a beverage that you're drinking out of, it's going to have a deposit on it. And finally, in 2015, we set a goal of 80%. The concern is that that number, which used to be when we first implemented the bottle bill in the 90s, has dropped, 90% that is, has dropped into the 80s, and now apparently, according to DEQ, into the 70% range. And the goal of getting back to 80% and moving forward, we felt was a reasonable goal. So I believe that the redemption centers that are coming are important. I think that is the next step. I think the timeline was well thought out, and I encourage you to support the bill.
Thanks, Suzanne. Jeff.
Representative Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Murray. I'm Vice President of Business Development for Far West Fibers. Far West Fibers handles a substantial amount of the curbside recyclables that are collected by the franchise haulers throughout the state of Oregon, and also a fair amount of the commingled commercial material as well. I'm here to address three items. I'll keep it short and throwing away my testimony. Item number one is glass bottles. As Jerry's mentioned, Peter's mentioned, it seems like it would be much simpler to just go ahead and have a single stream collection with glass bottles and let a facility like ours deal with it. And over time, we've learned that just doesn't work. Glass is that one item that doesn't mix in, as well as plastic bags, but that's another story. We strongly support glass bottles, such as wine bottles, being taken away from the curbside and as much as possible put in the redemption centers. With that said, we recognize the fact that stores aren't able to handle that at this time, so we realize it should be phased in over time as more actual redemption centers come along and relieve the stores. That brings me to number two, which is the phase-in. We strongly support the phase-in. We see some good efforts, excellent efforts, being done by the stores and by the distributors to set up the system, and we think they deserve the time it'll take to have that happen, which leads to item number three, which is the redemption centers. I've been in front of the committee, the bottle bill task force, a number of times mentioning this, and would like to one more time for the record, is Far West Fibers operates several recycling facilities throughout the metro region, and there are many other companies that operate them as well throughout the state of Oregon. And many of these may already have the zoning and the land and facilities that it would be possibly an easy step to add redemption to the facility. It would keep the cost down, and it could speed up the process of getting more and more of these containers out of the stores. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions? Thank you very much. We have Scott Clagg, Rick Winterhalter, and then if Ethan Nelson and Trevor Steele are also here from the City of Eugene, we'll find a way to get all four of you up here.
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon. Set on, Chair Cannon and representatives. of the committee. My name is Rick Winterhalter. I am the current chair of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. And just for introduction, the association is a not-for-profit coalition of individuals, governments, other not-for-profit organizations and businesses that are committed to encouraging waste prevention and recycling in Oregon. Membership is open to all who support our mission, and many of those who have spoken today are members of ours. On a daily basis, our members are working to meet the goals and objectives established by this body and codified in ORS 459 and 459A. And this group has worked together for over 30 years to keep Oregon a national leader in the business of recycling. And essentially, we all believe it makes more sense to direct those resources towards production than to be entombed in a landfill or incinerated. In addition, the environmental benefits of recycling are energy reduction, greenhouse gas reductions, preserving natural resources, and the annual scrap value alone in better years than this one of all collected recyclables in the state hovers around $178 million. So some of the things that we do want to get out there today are certainly thanks to OBRC and the grocers for taking Senate Bill 707 and making the addition of the water bottles a reality. And it was a Herculean effort to do that on their part. And once we've broken through the water bottles, that takes care of that distribution issue for all of those other non-carbonated containers that you've heard about today. And as Chair Kopetsky said, this bill is a package, and it does have a lot of delay in it for the implementation of these programs. And so it is a package. SB 707 put together a task force. That task force came back to you, and they've put something on the table. And AOR is supportive of HB 2184. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Clagg. I'm the legislative chair for the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I'd like you to know the association has been tracking this issue for about the past 5 years. We supported Senate Bill 707 and have been pleased with the accomplishments of the distributors and others in the grocers in getting the water bill section of it to work. We've presented our views early on to the task force. We were very pleased to see that the recommendations out of the task force were very much in line with what we've been talking about, the changes and the modernization of the bottle bill for those past 5 years. I'll just go over briefly the main components that we've been supporting over the years that have are included in 2184 today. First of all, it preserves the industry-run system. We think that that's really been the success of the bill in that it's a very simple bill, but industry has demonstrated that from that simple legislation, they're able to build a very effective system. And as we've seen with the water, they've been doing a good job with that. Second of all, the bill further expands container coverage, and we strongly support bringing all the new modern beverages into the system. We'd like to point out that one of the things that's been helpful for consumers in 707 is now that you can take your containers back to any store, not just the store that had just sold that brand. We think that the expanded coverage will continue to reduce the consumer confusion about what's in and what's out of the system, so I think we're really making some good strides in that area. Finally, we think that the inclusion of wine and liquor will put more glass off the curb, reducing, as we've heard, the amount of contamination in the curbside collection systems and improving the quality of the materials that come out of the bottle bill. In terms of increasing the deposit, we strongly support that. This increase that's been talked about will only partially offset for the 30-year loss in value. However, we do know that that is going to really help with the litter problem, and as well as setting us on the path toward getting back to those higher recovery rates that we originally had with the program. Finally, we think that the setting the return goal of 80% is reasonable, and that the target date of 2015 is quite achievable, and again, the increased deposit will help with that. We like the provision in the bill to enable the state to set some standards for redemption places. We think that that's, in, as we've heard, part of the issue with trying to get this system move ahead going forward is to have better redemption experience for the customers. We also welcome the industry initiative to get those redemption centers set up, as well as we think that the combination of these redemption centers, as well as retaining a certain amount of return to retail, would really provide the appropriate level of convenience and service for all Oregonians. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Any questions? None. You are excused. Oh, you two are excused. We still have two more panelists. I'm sorry. I'm jumping the gun here.
Thank you, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Nelson. I'm the Solid Waste and Green Building Program Manager for the City of Eugene. The City of Eugene supports House Bill 2184. The bill is good public policy. It's good for the environment, and it's good for a sustainable economy. House Bill 2184 will increase the recycling rate of all beverage containers, save energy, reduce litter, and reduce amount landfilled. With the passage of the 1971 bottle bill, Oregon led the nation in recycling policy, yet the beverage container market has changed dramatically since then. In 2007, the legislature added water bottles to the redemption list with an estimated impact of removing 125 million containers from landfills annually. While this step forward in waste prevention is a step forward in waste prevention, it leaves an estimated 327 million containers uncovered, of which it is estimated that only 38% are recycled. The expansion of covered containers and a required redemption rate support Oregon's leadership in resource and energy conservation. The DEQ estimates an energy cost savings, and Peter had showed that, equivalent to keeping 25,000 cars off Oregon roads and reducing carbon dioxide emissions by 100,000 tons annually, which is a win-win for the environment and our economy. Opponents state that the widespread availability of curbside recycling programs are providing enough opportunity for recovery. Curbside programs are excellent, yet they do not provide as high quality of materials for post-consumer markets. For example, curbside collection of glass containers is estimated to contaminate up to 20% of commingled waste streams. This contamination results in the rejection of loads, additional machine and hand sorting of loads, and increased contamination in the processing of the materials. House Bill 2184's proposed industry-run redemption centers will further system efficiencies to the benefit of both consumer and distributor by providing the distribution industry the leeway to manage the material stream in a cost-effective manner. This example of product stewardship engages private business to be the driver for innovation and allows government to provide quality public protections at the lowest cost. House Bill 2184 provides a unique opportunity for the Oregon legislature to capitalize on solid public policy that can protect the environment, conserve energy, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and position Oregon as a national leader. Oregonians are proud of the bottle bill. It is time to move it into the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Can I assume that that reflects your testimony as well?
Yeah.
Super. Any questions? Yeah, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, about the spirits bottles and the wine bottles, is there any difference that we know about in terms of consumer treatment, setting aside, you know, in a non-bottle bill world or bottle bill neutral world, that people treat a big expensive bottle, like a bottle of vodka or a bottle of wine, differently than they treat, say, a big malt liquor bottle, which is same size, same amount of glass, but cheaper? And do they treat those the same as we treat a can of Pepsi or a, you know, regular sized bottle of Miller Lite? Like, I'm trying to think about the challenge. This person testified, so I don't see a lot of wine bottles around, and I'm not in a good position to evaluate the scope of the problem of the bigger expensive bottles.
My understanding of the scope of the problem is that the larger liquor and wine bottles end up, while we assume that they would end up in 100% recovery in our commingled system, a large percentage of those either are disposed of directly or end up contaminating the commingling system, which is a large issue right now that we're trying to address. So that's my understanding of the issue.
We can talk later.
Thanks.
Thank you. Great. Thanks very much. I think we can squeeze one. There are certain names here that I know very well, and I know that if we call them back next week, they are very likely to be available. But Daryl Morgan and Katie Daly, who you would.
Maybe not.
That's what I thought.
Hi,
Chairman Cameron, members of the committee, my name is Daryl Morgan. I run a Sadie M liquor store in Albany. I've been in the liquor business since 1983. Prior to that, I was born and raised in the grocery business, so I'm acquainted with both sides of this. For what my 2 cents is worth, which back in 1976 might have been worth a nickel, today I don't really believe that liquor bottles or wine bottles should be added to this bill. It would clean up the environment, there's no doubt about that. But why put the burden back on the people that are directly involved with it, such as myself and my fellow liquor agents or the grocers? They already have enough in their pocket. They don't need any more. They don't need to be garbage collectors. And that's what you're trying to make them. And if you enjoy eating a head of lettuce that's been handled by a person that just brought in a bunch of dirty bottles out of a ditch, that's what you've created. And if you want to continue that, that's what you're going to get. Pretty quick, there's salmonella going around right now with peanut vendors that have got dirty situations. And you already heard about the dirty situations in the grocery stores from the people that have gone around and seen them. That is not the place to be recycling these bottles. You need them in a recycling place. That's what they're working on. Let them get that first and then expand the bottle bill. Any questions?
Thank you very much for being here. And let's hear from Katie and see then if we have any final questions.
So good afternoon, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. I've submitted written testimony, which is a lot longer than I'm going to deliver now. I want to highlight a few things that I don't think have necessarily been said. First of all, my name is Katie Daly. I'm with Recycling Advocates. I'm co-chair of Recycling Advocates. We were founded in 1987. We're a citizen-based grassroots group dedicated to creating a sustainable future for Oregon through local efforts to reduce, reuse, and recycle. And, you know, it's ever since the founding of our organization, we have been in working to improve the shortcomings of Oregon's, although it's iconic and groundbreaking, it's definitely never been perfect, the bottle bill. We talked about a lot of, the fact that it was one of Oregon's, it was definitely a litter control bill, and that's how it was sold. But it was, as Representative Berger said, a resource recovery bill that at its heart. And it was the first example of product stewardship legislation enacted, and it's a very good example of product stewardship legislation. And but there are some shortcomings. And, in 2007, Senate Bill 707 was very important in overcoming this hesitancy to change the bottle bill for fear it would break. And I think, we made some strides with 707. Obviously, as the numbers pointed out, the size of the water bottle situation was very large. And, taking hundreds of millions of bottles out of the landfill, it was a very big effort and a good step. But I think overwhelmingly Oregonians, through letters to the editor, into our organization and the Oregonian editorial board itself, doesn't think the job was done with 707. Water bottles were a step, but they really do think all beverages should be covered under the bottle bill. It's confusing otherwise, and that was a job that was left undone with 707, and that the 5 cents is a relic of the 70s and really needs to be brought up into the 21st century. So we support most of the things in 2184. In fact, we think that perhaps some of it should be even more aggressive. We have a little bit of concerns. I understand what the task force was trying to do with their recommendations with a phased-in approach, but to a certain extent, I think it might be easier to do some things all at once, increasing the deposit 10 cents and putting more containers and more beverages under the bottle bill at the same time rather than having two different steps of changes for the public to have to understand and deal with those changes. The important thing, though, about expanding the list of beverages that are covered are that, as Peter's slide showed, there's still a number of beverages that are side-by-side with other beverages that aren't covered under the bottle bill. And as people tried to tell us back in the 90s with the ballot measure, that's confusing to consumers. And the best thing to do to avoid that confusion is to have all the beverages covered under the bottle bill. And it would make a more effective program. It would take the 37% up to hopefully the 83% that we're seeing with the other beverage containers. And it's necessary in order to improve the bottle, what is a good bill. improve the bottle bill even more. We've heard a lot of things about the problems with glass recycling and curbside recycling. That's why it is important to include both wine bottles and liquor bottles. I don't think a dime deposit on an $1,800 bottle of cognac is going to, I don't think a dime deposit even on a $5 bottle of Mad Dog is going to really deter a lot of people from buying that bottle of Mad Dog. If anything, there is a revenue stream here to the state of Oregon when the state of Oregon is now the distributor and there are unredeemed deposits. Those unredeemed deposits are with the state of Oregon. So I don't think, or I'd like to see the numbers about whether there would be a net loss to the state of Oregon or actually a net gain for the state of Oregon. The third important provision in 2184 is the establishment of the return
rate. And Katie, you'll have to kind of summarize the
end there. Yeah. Of 80%. And I think the 80% goal is excellent to have in the bill. It'd be nice to have some teeth around what would happen should we not meet that 80% goal. It would be good to include some things that would be brought into place should we not meet the goal. And then finally, I would like to say, because I was going to yield to Jeremiah, he had to leave. He's not coming back. So I do want to talk about the fact that redemption centers, while we very much support the concept of a one-stop shopping place for not only bottles under the bottle bill, but other types of things that can be handled at redemption centers, with all due respect, going to Far West Fibers to return my bottles is not going to spell success to the bottle bill. It's a long way away. The success of the bottle bill is due to the return to retail component of the bottle bill. Everybody knows where they can go. They don't have to call Metro to find out where they have to go to return their bottles. They do it when they're going to the grocery store. They take the money they get from the bottle bill and they spend it on groceries. That's why there's a successful bottle bill. And anything to dilute that, although it can augment it, would actually erode the bottle bill. That's all we have.
Thank you very much. Any final questions? Representative Boone.
I have to throw this out. In Sweden, they have big containers on the side of the road out in the middle of the forest, and they're different colors for different colors of glass. And hole in it, you dump them in. Somebody comes by, picks them up, like with the arm, off the thing. And it's mostly in rural Sweden, of course. And that's something that we ought to think about here, is something for rural people, because for me to say I can't go to some redemption center, anywhere I go from my house is 30 minutes one way. So I'm not going to think, oh my God, I can't drive 5 minutes, But we're hearing about our local garbage service providing recycling, because we don't get curbside recycling out where I live. They are providing a recycling service for people once or twice a week at the local, it's called a quick stop. It's one of those little stores that has everything, including things that, we probably wouldn't find in your quick stops in town. But this is the service that they're providing to those of us who live in the rural areas so that we don't have to drive 30 minutes. We drive 1 mile or half a mile or 6 miles, however far you live from there. And people are using it, which is why they're upping the service from one day a week. So it's something that it is working there. They take, it's the retailer too. They take those. And, I'm all for getting all the stuff, except I was writing a note to Rep. Bentz about there's several people in my neighborhood who literally live off the bottles and cans they pick up out of the ditches. And so our ditches are pretty clean. My annual wheelbarrow walk along the 1,500 feet on the highway doesn't yield a whole lot anymore, so except, throwaway garbage. So I think it's working. And I think that, like you said, they'd either be happy that they're getting twice as much money or they'd be sad because they'd be losing their livelihood. So.
Thank you, Representative.
Thanks for indulging me.
Yeah, thanks for those comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick question. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name because I don't have... Mr. Morgan, in addition to the very good arguments you made regarding your industry, did you hear Mr. Cosgrove's argument about the possibility of loss of shelf space in a store like yours? And if you did, do you have a comment on that?
That's a very good possibility because liquor agents right now, I know, are suffering from budget constraints. There's talk about reducing our budget 30% over the next 3 or 4 months. We don't have the economic ability in order to regain that anyway, because our hands are tied because the state puts the top price on the liquor that we can charge. So the only way we have is to cut expenses. So in order to gain more room to put bottles in, we would have to cut expenses, and the only way to do it would be to cut shelf space.
Thank you, Mr.
anything further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee, we do still have additional folks who are interested in testifying. I'm going to assume that interest remains, and for that reason, we'll plan on scheduling a second public hearing on this. It will not be Tuesday, because on Tuesday, we will be joining the Senate Committee for an informational session on transmission needs in Oregon and the Northwest. Expect that to be over at 4:15, so we'll have an early release Tuesday afternoon around 4:15, and we'll look at scheduling this for next Thursday, although I'll need to talk to Beth about that, but you will see it posted, if not hearing from me sooner. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2184 and close the House Committee on Environment and Water.
Done. Thank you, sir.